So today is June 17th, 2014, and we're in Marjorie Niffin's home, and her little dog is outside providing the background noise. And we're going to talk today, Marjorie, about developing property in Fairbanks and naming streets. But let's start off a little bit with a bit of your background. If you can tell me maybe where you're from and how you came to Alaska.
I was born in Cleveland, but never Ohio, but never lived there. And I guess it was an unfortunate birth because I ended up in an orphanage and was adopted by people from southeastern Pennsylvania. And that was very helpful.
Yes.
So through grades 11, grade 11 mainly, I went to school in the southeastern Philadelphia, West Delaware and Chester County areas. Then I went to the University of Chicago after that, and while I was there I married and had one daughter.
What were you studying in Chicago?
Oh, I was part of the Hutchins era.
Oh.
And the usual answer to that is they told us we could specialize later. So it was a general liberal arts program with 14 required courses, and you either placed out of them or you took them all.
Wow.
Well, I took them all. So anyway, I was there for 3 years. And then I went back to southeastern Pennsylvania and in due course got into a Ford Foundation program at Temple University for people with liberal arts degrees who did not have any teacher college preparation. So we spent the summer getting indoctrinated and then got thrown into classrooms. And the classrooms were in central Philadelphia, which was at that time low income, lots of projects, and
So this was like for high school and elementary school? High school teaching?
I don't think there were any elementary school people in this program. I think we were all high school. But I ended up teaching 7th and 8th grade with insufficient materials, insufficient access to materials and things, and more than sufficient numbers of students.
Yeah.
They sat on whatever they could find to sit on in the classroom. And it was an interesting experience. If anybody had evaluated my teaching skills at that point, they would have said, "She's not going to make it."
And what decade was this in then?
This was 1956, somewhere in that range.
Right.
And must have been 1956, yes. Yeah. 56 to 59. And I taught at one junior high for 2.5 years and then moved to one of the high schools, which in many respects was even worse than the junior high. But it was all low income and lots of truancy and things like that. So anyway, the requirement was in order to get the proper documentation and so on and get credit for the year of teaching, you when you came to Alaska, you had to have 140 days.
Oh.
On the 141st day, I left.
So you had 140 teaching days
teaching
of
days,
practice,
yes,
in order to teach in Alaska.
To have that credit that you could buy up in Alaska onto the teacher's retirement system. So anyway, we left for Alaska very shortly thereafter. And my daughter and I drove up the highway with another friend. And
why Alaska, Marjorie?
What?
Why Alaska?
I always wanted to go to Alaska, and I had a friend who was 2 years ahead of me at school, and she had moved to Alaska, and she moved to Alaska for an interesting reason. Her father was a functionary of the Pennsylvania Railroad. Well, all the railroads gave their families passes, and the Alaska Steamship Line was part of the railroad. Therefore, your pass was also good on that. So she could get to Alaska with very little funds. And the only reason I bother to relate that is it turns out when my husband and I were married, it came out, well, I'd known it before that, but his reason to come to Alaska was his father was a functionary on the Great Northern, and he could come on the railroad and the boat. And so he came that way. Anyway, no, I just wanted to come to Alaska. When I was between 10th and 11th grade, I think it was just after the war. We had a new car and we had gas. And my father taught summer school, but he had the month of August. Schools in those days used to only start after Labor Day.
Right.
So he had the month of August, and we were taking our grand trip of the West. Well, we got to Calgary, and I wanted him to go so badly on up and look at the Alaska Highway, and he said, no, I just can't, we don't have time. So anyway, I had had that interest long before this friend came up here. But it turned out that it was good to have a friend here because... then I had a place to land, even though it was in the mud on Chena Ridge. but yeah. So anyway, after I put in my 140 days and put in my resignation, here I came. And we arrived May 8th of 1959, which was just after statehood, which was, of course, as of January 1st, 59. So all the programs that said you had to be here before statehood, I just fell out of. But anyway, that's what it was. And I'm very happy that I did that.
So you came up, that must have been quite the drive at that time.
On at that early time, we had a VW bus. We had a trailer with a... 4-foot tongue, and that's noteworthy because the shorter the tongue, the harder it is to back them up, and you always had to figure a place where you could go forward. Because otherwise you'd jackknife this silly thing.
Yeah.
And most of the stuff in the trailer was books.
Mm.
And I think there are a lot of them downstairs here that are still in the same boxes they were boxed in to move 55 years ago. So anyway, when I arrived here, I went in to talk to the superintendent of schools. And the discussion went on. And I said, well, I've been teaching at the high school most recently in Philadelphia. And before that, I taught junior high. And he said, well, I have a fourth grade class. I said, I've never dealt with students that young. I'm not interested in fourth grade. I don't think it would work for me. So I went away and got on the list of substitutes and was teaching at various... the junior high and the high school periodically that following fall. And I got called into the principal's office in the junior high one day, which was right next to the superintendent's office. The principal was on the left-hand side of the stairs and the superintendent was on the right-hand side. And she said, by the way, you stop by and see Dr. Ryan before you leave today. So I meandered down the hall, and he said, I've got a fourth grade. So since I had been subbing periodically, but it wasn't steady, and so I said, okay, I'll do fourth grade. And he said, well, go on over to Denali and, you know, see, talk to them over there and meet the people and so on. This was... early December, and the teacher for whom I was the replacement was Virginia Gilmore, and she was, 40-ish and pregnant. And she was leaving.
Yeah.
So, and she was not coming back after her confinement, but So the position, I would be lucky, I would have the position thereafter.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that wasn't very helpful. So anyway, we got through the last 5 months of school, and the kids, I think, learned something because they weren't disrespectful and weren't jumping on the desks mm-hmm. and saying, we don't ever get anything done, and they could read a book. And one day, Dr. Ryan came down, and he was wandering around seeing various classes at Denali. And he came into a class, a reading class that I was teaching. Well, I had never really taught reading.
Yeah.
But we were struggling along with this reading class. And we're standing at the back of the room at with the class in front of us. And he puts his arm around my shoulder and pats my rear end and says, "You're doing well." He goes out the door. Well, today that would be considered inappropriate.
Yeah.
But
yep.
It was fine. And so at the end of the year, it looked like maybe there was going to be a vacancy at Norddale for sixth grade. So that was moving up.
Yeah.
Well, I went in to the first meeting, which we always had on just the day after Labor Day. And all the teachers would meet over at Lathrop in the auditorium and sing all five stanzas or whatever it was of the Star Spangled Banner. and listen to the invocation and all that. And when we got done, I guess it was the principal from Denali pulled me aside and said, "You need to go see Dr. Ryan." So I went over and he said, "We have a vacancy in math at the junior high."
Oh.
Which was right down the hall again.
Yeah.
So that was very much of interesting to me because my father taught math for 41 years.
Really?
And although I was not a math major, I could certainly do 7th and 8th grade math.
Right.
And so I said, "Oh, that'll be fine. I'll do that." Yeah. And then I was there for the next 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And until I managed to injure myself and then ended up retiring on disability.
Oh.
So at the end of that period, the end of the 10 years, my husband was doing other things, preparing for his retirement.
So this is, your husband came up before you to Alaska?
Oh, he was an Alaskan already.
He was?
Yes.
Okay, so when did he come up?
He came in 1934.
In 1934?
Yes.
So is this a different husband than the one that you were married to in Philadelphia? Or is this the same husband? I'm mixed up.
Let's not go there.
Okay, fine. We won't. No, we won't go. I was getting mixed up.
It is.
Okay,
it is.
That's all we need to know. I was just confused there for a moment. Yeah. So tell me that.
I left him back in Philadelphia.
Oh, okay then. Gotcha.
However, a funny aside to that is, I had met his mother and a couple of his brothers while we were in Chicago, and I was leaving him. He was in a PhD program at Temple, and Polly, my daughter, and I came up here, and I'm driving down College Road one day. I hadn't been here more than 2 weeks, I don't think, when this old beat-up truck pulls right in front of me and stops, and out gets somebody that looked sort of familiar, but I wasn't sure who it was. And he says, "Remember, I'm Art, Shay's brother." He told me you were coming.
Happens.
So at one point, we even had grandmother living in the house with us.
Oh, wow.
That is, it was Polly's real grandmother.
Yeah.
But I wasn't expecting to find relatives 5,000 miles away. So anyway, that was just an aside.
Right. So then tell me more about your husband.
Okay, my husband came in 1934.
And where would he...
He came from... Minot, North Dakota at that point. He had lived along the Great Northern because when you're going up in the railroad business, apparently you move from station to station before you get to the main headquarters, which is where his father ended up as an assistant general roadmaster or something like that. And he was 17, I think, when he came. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Mm-hmm. And like my other friend, he came on passes.
Right.
And while he was on the Alaska steamship, they stopped in Juneau, and Earl Beistlein got on.
Hmm.
And he was, there were two or three other people that were all coming to the university. And they went to, I thought he said to, Seward, but it must have been Whittier.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I had this failing repeatedly of turning him off after I'd heard the story 50 times. And I'm very regretful of that now.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I did then.
Yeah.
And I think other people probably do the same thing.
Yep.
You think, oh, I've heard this one. And you go about doing something else.
Yep.
So anyway, there are... He had lots of information, and it just isn't the same when you try to tell the things that he told in my presence.
Yeah.
And so I don't even try in most instances.
Mm.
But anyway, I met him the first day I was here, just by accident. Well, my friend from back east was an aspiring artist, and she should have aspired a little harder. But anyway, she was president of the Farthest North Art Guild.
Oh.
And yeah, and he was general secretary. His then wife was a very good artist.
Mm.
But anyway, they were having a showing up at the university in what was the old post office.
Mm-hmm.
And so I managed to get there in the afternoon. We arrived here at noon, and by 3:00 in the afternoon, I'd already shook hands with the president of the university.
Wow.
And then later in the day, we went down to see that the paintings were all taken care of properly.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened to be at what was then not my husband's mm-hmm. residence, because he was boxing them up to ship them off.
Right.
So anyway, that was just an interesting note.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think you came more to find out about some historical road names than necessarily.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
Here all my
but you
my longevity.
No,
and what
no, it's good.
It,
because in order to get to telling me about building, it's nice to know how you got here. And what was your husband's name? Sorry,
Daryl Niffen.
Daryl. So he what
he,
was
he
his
only
business?
Went by Duke. Though.
Duke. Okay.
Yeah.
So what was his business then, Marjorie?
He worked on Fort Wainwright when during the time we were married.
Mm-hmm.
he had started out in mining engineering while he was at the University of Alaska, and like most other students, worked for the FE company in the summers. And I guess they came back about October and went out in April
mm-hmm.
and took their books with them
mm.
and came back to do their final exams and so on. But he was there until he went into the service. Then he enlisted here at Fort Wainwright, mm. just down the hill from us. And he served all his time in the United States,
mm.
half of it in North Dakota, teaching cold weather survival.
Oh.
But he had enlisted here.
Right.
And then when he... was discharged. He went back to the FE company for a short while, but they were having labor problems, and there was a strike. If not, there was a lot of talk of a strike.
Mm.
But he was a foreman of a section and did not want to participate as the company's representative. So he left that when opportunity came for him to work on Fort Wainwright, which was then LAD Air Force Base.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was LAD Air Force Base when he and I were married in 1962. And it became Fort Wainwright, I think, very shortly thereafter, maybe two or three years. But it's been Fort Wainwright ever since.
Right. And so then how did you get into the business of being developers?
He was transitioning in a way. He knew before too long, I'm going to retire.
Right.
He was significantly older than I was.
Yeah.
In fact, he came to Alaska when I was 6 months old.
Oh, really? Wow.
So there was a difference there.
Yeah.
And but he was, he had had his 20 years at that point in civil service and the Army combined.
Right.
Because those times you moved your service time over to your civil service time. And then after we had been married about 6 years, like 5 or 6 years, he was able to retire, and he did. And I'm sure he was looking forward to that. I don't think he ever really articulated it to me. But one of his friends was Bud Myers, who was Myers Realty.
Oh.
And Bud came out one day and tried to sell us on a piece of property. And we thought about it, and Duke said, yeah, I think I'd like to do that. So that was our start of subdivision.
Oh.
Down, you know where KFAR's old tower is that's sinking into the ground on Farmer's Loop?
On Farmer's Loop, yes.
Yeah, that subdivision, Sunrise, directly across from it, was our first.
So how many acres were there then when you
purchased it? There were 65 at that time.
65 acres.
We bought it on a purchase-release contract, you know, one phase after another.
Right.
As you paid off a little bit, you got back a few more acres.
Right.
And things were certainly different in the subdivision process then as to what they are now.
Right. So was it pretty easy back then? Was there as much, not as much permitting, I suppose, that had to be done? Or
you still had to have a preliminary plat. It could almost be a hand-drawn one.
Right.
Yeah. And just an aside, I saw a hand-drawn one for a waiver just this spring from somebody. But there was the caveat that, well, you have to bring us something better when you're ready for your final plat.
Right.
But it didn't have any, that particular one didn't have any dedications or anything on it. It was just a piece of paper saying, I want to divide this into four parcels.
Right.
And, you know, so it was relatively simple. But anyway, we did that, we did Sunrise in a number of phases. And
how did you have the experience for doing that? I mean, that's a, you know,
you learned.
Just learned.
You learned. It was OJT,
on
the job
training. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the Fowler property originally. And she had a country club type restaurant there. I've heard people say, oh, yes, we used to go out to Fowler's. Sort of like you'd say, I'm going to Ivory Jack's or I'm going to the Turtle. I don't think it was nearly as fancy as those, but we found lots of dishes in the old house when we bought it and we got the house, which was to our detriment. We had to tear it down.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But anyway.
So how did you plan? How did you plan the subdivision then? Did you just sit down and look at it and just measurements?
You just draw lines on a piece of paper to
start with.
This is what we think we can do with it.
Yeah.
And since I was teaching, I didn't spend a lot of time on that. I would cut survey lines with him on the weekends and things like that. But I didn't spend nearly the time he did laying it out. And then, of course, after you take your idea, and that's what it is at that point, you take it to a surveyor.
Yeah.
And somewhere between the two of you,
you come up with something. Yeah.
But our plats initially were all hand drawn.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
And now they're all machine done.
Yeah.
Everything's done from the closure of each lot dimensions to the whole thing. It's all done on...
So let's look at some of the street names then that you would have had. Sure. In that one, Marjorie, you brought a map here. Do you want me to turn it around
so you know where it is?
Oh,
of course.
And I had to bring a magnifying glass because I can't read these. No. So we're looking at Farmer's Loop.
Yeah, well, so just for the heck of it, because we've been talking about old things.
Yeah.
Here goes McGrath.
McGrath, yeah.
And
Road.
There's Farmer's Loop here.
Yeah. And here's the sunrise, probably right over in here.
Yeah, it's over by the golf course.
Yeah, that's right. All up in here. Those ones here?
That one. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, when I first came here, which was 1959, we located on Greenock Road, which is this road here. And the school bus came around Farmer's Loop. It went up McGrath Road about this far, went back down, came around. There was, none of this was here.
Right.
It went up Greenock Road and picked up whatever was there. It went over to Blaine Road, which ended just at the top, didn't go to the top of the hill.
Oh, didn't it?
It only went to where Yankovic Road was
now. Right.
And Yankovic Road was just a muddy track going out to, I believe it was Pete Yankovic's property, which is now the Muskox Farm.
Right.
And then it went on to University Park, and in this whole area, it picked up everyone from first grade, because kindergarten didn't take them at that age. It picked up every student and dropped them off at the various schools. It went to University Park, then it went backtracked up College Road and picked up some more people, I guess. I don't know. And went on to Lathrop.
Yeah.
And then schools started, and that was one school bus.
Yeah.
One school bus.
Gosh.
Now, well, there are probably 20 buses that go on those routes, which have, of course, been extended into the hills and so on.
Right.
But, and they pick up lots of kids.
Yeah.
And the elementary students do not ride with the middle school, and the middle school do not ride with the high school.
Right.
Because they all have differing times of for their school day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
so the streets on the Sunrise subdivision.
Sunrise, we have Rise Road, we have Fall Road, which goes downhill. Road goes
uphill. That's original.
At the top, between the two of them, is Ookpik.
Uh-huh.
And Ookpik is our adopted daughter's middle name.
Oh.
And she had to have a road.
Right.
So she has Ookpik Drive.
And where is that here? I'm just trying to look. Here it is, right here. Ookpik Way and Fall Road and Rise Road.
And then there was Sunway.
Sunway, yep.
Because this was Sunrise Subdivision, and Sunway was due north and south, and therefore you should be able to see the rising sun.
So, did that involve? No, that's just a sunrise. That's just that one. That one.
Just that little 65 acres.
Wow.
I think we did it over. Well, it was in three main phases, and they were probably 3 years apart. So, we were basically out of Sunrise by 1975.
Okay.
And we had started in there about 66.
So how many houses a year would you try and build then?
We didn't build the houses.
Oh, you didn't
build
them?
All we did was subdivisions.
We didn't
start building houses until somewhat later.
Oh, I see. So you just did the subdivision, and then you sold the lots. People would buy the
lots, and then they would come in with their own contractors and do whatever.
So at that time, there probably wasn't actual running water, like town water up there. Was it all wells?
There still isn't.
Okay.
No, it doesn't go beyond Blaine Lake subdivision.
Oh, okay.
And they've had problems with it. And I think they bonded about 5 years ago to extend college utilities to that area where the house was sinking into the ground.
Right, yes,
across from Blaine Lake.
Right.
Yeah, but that's the limit of what was municipal utilities at that time, and it's now Aurora or whatever the water system is in town.
Right.
No, we have never had any properties that were on anything other than individual wells and septic systems.
Right. Okay.
So.
And then how about the electricity? How
who brings Golden Valley? Valley? You go around Farmers Loop,
mm-hmm.
and they went into the subdivision, and as people
then they hook them up.
Hooked up.
Right.
Applied, they would hook them up. MUS was a somewhat different circumstance.
And what's
because
MUS?
Because we were on Greenock Road,
uh-huh.
and our neighbor worked for one of the electric contractors. But before that, he'd wanted a phone, so he ran his own line over the top of the hill for 2 miles.
Really?
And, yeah, and there it was coming down the hill.
Yeah, wow.
And, yeah.
Now, you said the one road was named after your adopted daughter's middle name.
Yes, that's Oakpick.
Okay, so can you tell me a little bit about her, your adopted daughter?
Well, she's one quarter Eskimo.
Mm-hmm.
Her birth mother was from Kotzebue. And interestingly enough, she has siblings, and she knows her siblings, and
mm-hmm.
Spends a fair amount of time whenever she's in town running around with them.
Yeah.
And then she's now living in Palmer.
Oh.
She was in Wasilla, but she's in Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was more a change of the post office than anything else. But she has all sorts of siblings and shirt-tail relatives down in the Anchorage area. And she has met a number of them after the mother of her birth mother died. There was a request that regarding that person's estate,
mm-hmm.
and Kim got a chance to meet a lot of the people, which she was there to tell them, I'm not interested in taking any of her estate, but I want to meet you all.
Yeah, right.
And that was, she said they were a bit leery of mm-hmm. her at first, when here shows up this other one with two that we know were granddaughters.
Right.
But here comes another one.
Yeah.
Anyway, she was able to dissuade them.
Wonderful.
And so she met some more people that were in the Anchorage area. And so she hasn't been completely deprived of that part of her heritage.
Right.
And she's we enrolled her in the Kotzebue Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And
So how old was Kim when you adopted her then? Just really young?
I'd say she was relatively young. I was playing baseball the last day the students were at school, which was May 17th mm-hmm. that year. And the principal at Denali, this was the fourth grade now.
Yeah, right.
The principal at Denali came out and said, oh, we got a call from the hospital. You're to pick up your daughter when school's over today. So that's how...
Wow.
Yes, we've had her since she was
a newborn.
A couple days old.
Oh, how lovely. And when was she born? What year, then, Marjorie?
1960.
Oh.
I've been here a whole year.
That's right. So, sister for Polly.
Polly was very interested in having a sibling at that point. So, Polly was 7. She had just had her 7th birthday.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. Oh, lovely.
And she went to University Park and then to the Poison Mushroom, which is Joy School.
Mm.
And one of the things you did the first day of school was you asked the child when they got home, now, where did you go to school today? Because remember, we have this busload of kids.
Everything, right.
And we can take them anywhere.
Make sure
they went to Hunter. Sometimes they went to Norrdale's.
No, right.
But she happened to go to Joy.
Okay.
So, anyway. But she started out at University Park.
Mm.
Then later, our other children went to Norrdale and University Park.
Oh, my.
But never went to Joy.
Huh.
And, well, it was a way of balancing numbers of students. If you had them on the bus,
didn't matter which.
It doesn't really matter to the school district where you put them. It may matter to the parents because they have to go an extra 4 or 5 miles to collect their child when there's an event.
Right.
But it didn't seem to matter.
So it wasn't like you went to school because you lived in this particular area.
Yeah,
that was a school.
If you were not a walker,
right?
You were at the mercy of this the balancing act.
Yeah.
To get the right number of students with the right teacher.
Right.
Grade level.
Yeah. So moving on from Sunrise.
From Sunrise, the next thing we did was Viewpoint.
Oh, one of my favorite streets.
Yeah, we did Viewpoint.
Yeah.
We had an opportunity. It took us a long time to get this person to sell us the land.
Oh, really?
But, then we, from 75 on through, I think probably our last iteration there was about 1980. But we started in 75 and did Viewpoint with the exception of the southwest corner, which was 10 acres there,
okay,
which we left off at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But it was part of the preliminary, and we followed the same layout for Viewpoint, for the first edition that we had used on the rest of it.
Right.
So it's all basically.
How many acres was that then?
That was 80 acres.
Okay.
And there was about 12 acres below it between the section line and Farmers Loop Road, which we could not get the person who sold us the 80 acres mm-hmm. to sell us that.
Hmm.
And then the area, there was another 5 acres in front of it also, which we couldn't get her to sell us. This was Fern Palfy, and but she'd sell it to our kids. So our kids bought that. And then there was, the caveat was that we had to buy the property across the road that she also owned.
Oh.
Well, we did, and we got rid of most of it. But we turned it into Candomar.
Oh, okay.
Huh. Which we had a friend, Candy Walker,
mm-hmm.
who is now Candy Wagaman, and
yes.
has been for many, many years. And so that's where the name Candomar came from.
Oh, I see.
Between all of us. It's the first two letters of everyone's name.
Name. Oh, interesting. I've often wondered where that came
yeah.
from. Yeah.
Yeah. Then after we were... It's just
Viewpoint.
Across from Viewpoint.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Where are we here?
There's
Candomar Road
yeah.
right there. Yeah.
And I wanted to name all the roads with the Latin names for various flora that
mm-hmm.
grew in them.
Yeah.
The only one I got on that was Pyrola.
Okay. And the Overhill Drive?
Overhill,
that's because it's over the hill.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then Darrell Drive, that must Darryl's, be after Duke, your husband?
No, after my son.
After your son? Ah.
Who's also Duke.
Okay.
He's Duke the second.
So where does he fit into the line of your children then?
He's the last.
He's the last.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we had another adoptee, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter has Peter's Road down here.
Oh.
But you can't put in an apostrophe for some reason. They don't like that at the
okay.
powers that be street naming people. So... people can think it's anything they want to.
Right.
But it's really Peter's Road.
So when you were laying out your developments then in the early days.
By that time we had a little more knowledge of what we wanted to do to it. It doesn't always work to lay everything out on a grid.
Yeah.
But once again, for the most part, Viewpoint is even rectangular
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
in lots.
Yeah.
Every so often, though, you had to
realign.
Move. Well, you'd do a preliminary plat that you hoped worked, and then you would, when you got on the ground, if you found that you put the best part of the lot in the middle of a draw, you'd move it.
Right.
And as long as it tends to conform to the preliminary, we haven't had an awful lot of problem when we present a final plat.
Right, right.
That has some differentiation in it.
Now, when you were naming the streets in these two particular subdivisions, was it a pretty easy process then? Do you remember?
Yeah, you could
pick anything?
Any name you wanted, as long as it didn't exist somewhere else. And even at that time, they didn't look at the rest of the area because we didn't have either 911 mm-hmm. or enhanced 911. Now, and I do not agree with this philosophy myself, mm-hmm. because I think they know where the phone calls are coming from at the emergency center. If it's a 488 mm-hmm. number, mm-hmm. it's not coming from almost to Nenana. Mm-hmm. But anyway, now they have the naming process such that if it exists anywhere in the borough, which is why you come up with some of these strange names, because it's easy to have two people decide one at either end of the borough, I'm going to have Spruce Drive. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't have Spruce Drive because there's Spruce Drive somewhere else. The only place that seems to be exempt from this is City of Fairbanks, which is a first-class city, and North Pole. They both have numbered streets.
Okay.
And, yeah.
And that seems to be
they
okay.
Don't, have you ever looked at the street signs down here at the bottom of the hill on Trainer Gate?
Yeah.
Over on the old Stees.
Yeah. Yes.
It's T-R-A-I-N-E-R.
Right.
On the new Stees, it's T-R-A-I-N-O-R.
Oh, I never noticed that before.
And I don't really know whether it was somebody's name or whether it meant you go down this road and you either go to the train or the gate to Fort Wainwright.
Right. That, yeah. Could be.
One
yeah.
of the gates.
One of the gates. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the O-R, you say, oh.
Okay. No. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, at that time, at the time we were doing Viewpoint, then we just didn't have good sense. There was a parcel available on the Nenana, what was the old Nenana Road at that point. Not the parks, mm-hmm. but the old Nenana. Mm-hmm. And so we bought that and did some subdividing up there. And then at the same time, we bought a piece from the state at one of their state auctions, which probably 15 years thereafter, I subdivided.
Oh.
I was told, you have to have a name on this plat. I said, oh, well, I was in talking to the people in the planning department. They said, you have to have a name. Okay, I said, well, we'll call it ONH.
Okay.
Old Nenana Highway.
Right, right.
And that's what it is.
It is. Huh.
Yeah.
And that's out of town now.
Oh, it's
quite a bit out of town.
It's about 6 miles up
right.
the, if you turn off onto the old road by Esther there.
Yes.
And go up, wind your way up the hill.
Right. It's up there.
It's up there. And there's Panorama Subdivision, which is about 4 miles up. And then ONH is another mile and a half or 2 miles.
Right.
Yeah.
So
and all we did on that was, all I did was make four long lots that still conformed with the requirement the length did not exceed the width by more than four times.
Oh, okay.
But
right.
The way the road went there, all of them had access off of what had been an old gravel pit road, which was in the right of way. And so we didn't have to build any road on that one, or I didn't have to build any road. By that time, my husband was deceased.
Oh.
And so
you carried on with the business.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I got to the point where I wondered, looking back on it, at that time, looking back, who had been doing the subdividing, you know? And I found a piece on Chena Ridge that I was not overly able to traverse as well as I should have. You know, it was a fine piece of property, but Duke had always said, well, if anything comes available on Chena Ridge, we'll buy it.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought that 120 acres.
Wow, we're on Chena Ridge.
That's Ridge Point.
Oh, that's Ridge Point.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so anyway, so that was after his death. That was in 1983 and 4 that I was doing that. But anyway, we're still on Farmer's
right.
Loop.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're finishing up on Viewpoint, we bought 160 acres to the north of that in section 10.
Okay.
And was that section 10 or that? Yeah, and it was Springlade. It turned into Springlade.
Okay.
And our only access originally was up Ski Boot Hill.
Oh, yes.
And across on a section line easement.
Mm-hmm.
You want to go off the record?
Yeah. No, no.
Oh, okay.
No. I'm just looking to. There's Ski Boot Hill there, road. So yeah. here's all the streets here.
Yeah. And the only access was this one off of Brune Road.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And Art Brune had talked with me at Main School at the junior high. And I said, Art, we're going to have to use your section line easement, but we'll upgrade it for you. Well, he had a building sitting in the right of way and all sorts of trucks and vehicles some of which we managed getting to move slightly.
Mm-hmm.
So we had this 160 acres.
It's all in here,
yeah.
Right. So Brune Road's named after Art Brune, who was a teacher.
It was Art's driveway.
And okay.
It was just a driveway.
Yeah.
Well, to get any sort of approval, you had to at least have a decent road to get there. Plus, it doesn't make a lot of sense to try to sell lots when the road is going to wash out or it's going to be so full of holes that they're going to have four-wheel drive to negotiate it on a dry day. On a wet day, they might. But
yeah.
So anyway, we talked with Art about that, and we upgraded his driveway and turned it into a what was an acceptable road for a subdivision. Once again, we did it in phases.
Mm-hmm.
And as we moved along, the roads got extended.
Right.
However, that was not the best access. So we knew Steve Kerner because I'd bought property from him back in 1959. We went to Steve and said, gee, we'd love to build a road across your property. And since you have about 60 acres down there or whatever it was, you can subdivide off of it too.
Okay.
So he gave us an easement, which later he dedicated
right.
along with us. And so that's how Springlade gets to Greenock.
Right.
And he has, or now his kids, who were all junior high and smaller when I first arrived and first knew them, but they're located right in that area.
Huh. And, so how did you come up with Springlade Road?
Well, there was a glade down here which had a spring in it.
Oh, okay.
And that's how my husband said, I think that would be a great name for that.
Right.
So we did that we worked on that for a number of years. Somebody once told me, well, if you're a competent subdivider, you get in and get out. And if you hold the property more than 5 or 6 years, you're just not doing it right. Well, I think it was 20 years until we sold the last lot. But anyway.
So the other names in this area, so we've got Upland Drive,
well,
so it must be...
That's the upside.
Going the upside. Yeah, and then we have Arrow Forum.
Ariofram.
And
Ariofram is the Alaska cotton you see
growing
along the road. Well, this was a low area down here where the glade was with the spring in it. And there was a lot of Alaska cotton down there.
Right.
So I managed to get that. I've never been able to get anyone to let me do epilobium or angustifolium and some of those.
Right.
And
Deer Valley Road, that
part is not ours.
That part isn't yours there.
No.
Okay, so it was just all up in here.
If you want to see what pioneer access roads were like, drive around this Deer Valley.
Okay.
It's been upgraded somewhat, but
when Spring Glade Service Area was established, mm-hmm. first of all, there was nobody living there. So the borough, and I don't think they do that now, but they let us establish a road service area with no residents.
Really?
So there was nobody to vote on it. And we were the commissioners. And we didn't live there. We lived over here.
Wow.
But anyway, later, these other roads off of Skibo, mm-hmm. not Deer Valley, but the other two,
yeah.
Wanted to be part of, and we had already picked up Broome Road because it served Spring Glade. They wanted to be part of the road service area. Then the road, so there was an election, and it included properties down over the other side of Farmer's Loop.
Mm-hmm.
However, Deer Valley and the lower part of Ski Boot Hill Estates was not permitted in because the roads were in too bad condition.
Really?
Well, I had to spend all the money
right.
on them.
Yeah.
Huh. So anyway, just before my husband died, Don Bennett, who was then Senator Bennett,
mm-hmm.
called him and said, "Hey, Duke, you're doing some subdividing, and we have some road money that we would like to put in the Fairbanks area. Can you suggest anything?" Well, that's an open invitation. Suddenly, Spring Glade, the original access, was all upgraded. It's been added to since, but this under a state appropriation, here came Spring Glade.
Wow.
And got done.
Uh-huh.
Also, we got a road in Fairhill done.
Oh, did you really?
We did.
Huh.
Yes. And there was a third one. It wasn't Viewpoint. I have to think where that third one was.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that was the days when people could bring home bacon.
Right.
And gosh,
you know, unfortunately, Don died fairly soon thereafter, as did my husband. But we did have roads.
Wow.
That received city lights had not been much of a road.
Yeah.
It was up to code,
mm-hmm.
but the code wasn't very stringent at that time.
Yeah.
So anyway, the state upgraded it, and part of the rationalization for that was there is no access road to the Steese Highway on the east side.
Right.
So that didn't look like a complete bit of bacon.
Yeah.
So that's how that came about.
Hmm.
And, you know, all along we had been buying various land as it became available. Because, as my husband often reminded me, well, I could have bought all this for 25 cents an acre when I came, but nobody had 25 cents.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And they were large parcels. So,
yes.
But even as late as 1980, I think, Chena Hot Springs Road, everything was $100 an acre.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now look at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.